Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Wednesday, January 11th. For our climate story of the week, we'll look at the climate stats of the year. Europe's Copernicus Climate Change Service, which tracks global temperatures, reported this week that the last 8 years have been the 8 hottest years on record, with 2022 being the 5th hottest year ever recorded. We'll look at some of those numbers. Let's see what happened to the climate in 2022 with Henry Fountain, climate change reporter for The New York Times. Hi, Henry. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So 2022 was the 5th hottest year on record, according to Copernicus. Can you give us some of the numbers that that ranking is based on?
Copernicus, which is like basically sort of the European version of what NOAA does in the United States, takes temperature readings, monthly temperature readings all around the world, takes data from other countries, et cetera, uses some modeling, some computer simulation, and comes up with a figure. They do it every month. They also do it yearly. So I think this year, the finding was that globally temperatures were 1.18 degrees centigrade, which is roughly about 2.1 Fahrenheit, higher than the late 19th century, which is before we started pumping all this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere by burning fossil fuels. So, they do this regularly. They're very good at it, just as NOAA, NASA does it as well. And all the agencies that do it tend to agree every year. I think NASA's and NOAA's numbers are coming out tomorrow, and they'll be pretty much exactly the same. The take home is that global warming's still happening. Wasn't the hottest year ever, but it was really much hotter than, 100 years ago.
Well, 2016 remains the hottest year thus far, according to those numbers. Is it a sign of improvement that 2022 is only the 5th hottest year?
No. In fact, it's just a sign that the planet is warming inexorably, essentially. There's some variability from year to year that has nothing to do with climate change. For instance, this year, as in the past two, we've been in what's called a La Nina, which is a climate affecting pattern that starts with colder than normal temperatures in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, and that tends to keep temperatures globally a little bit lower than normal. So, despite the fact that we had this La Nina this year or 2022, we still are near the top in terms of record keeping, and as you said, it's the last 8 years with the hottest on record, and you can actually go back to 2000, and I think 19 of the 22 years or 20 or 21 of the 22 years were the hottest on record. So, it's just another sign that the planet is warming. We haven't really stopped it. We're making some progress and hopefully going to figure out how to slow it down and stop it. But as of now, it's still happening.
Just to remind listeners of some of the basics here, if the big picture is that the world is just over 2 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it was at the beginning of the fossil fuels era, late 1800s, why is that such a big deal? 2 degrees doesn't sound like very much in terms of our experience day to day.
Right. Although I think as we've all discovered in the last 5 or 10 years, particularly, 2 degrees does make a big difference. It increases extreme weather. In summer, it increases the duration and intensity of things like heat waves, and for the simple reason that we're starting at a higher baseline temperature now. It has all these effects, and in fact, a lot of climate scientists, have predicted that warming of 2 degrees Fahrenheit would produce these impacts, these extreme weather impacts, other impacts. I think a lot of them are I wouldn't say the word alarmed, but they're noticing that these impacts are actually happening faster than we thought they would. So 2 degrees may not sound like a lot, but really makes a big difference. And, you know, the planet has been fairly stable temperature-wise for a long time. It has had, you know, ups and downs over millions of years. Usually those ups and downs occur very, very slowly. We've increased temperatures by 2 degrees in like 130 years, say. And that's super fast. And that's because of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases.
Were there particular hottest hot spots on Earth last year, or doesn't it get measured that way?
No, it definitely gets measured that way. And it's a good question because, in fact, Europe was really a hot spot last year, particularly last summer. I think they had the warmest summer ever in Europe. And there were, I don't know if you remember, but there were a succession of really intense heat waves across Europe. And there were temperature records being set in towns all over continental Europe, all over the UK. So, you know, Europe is definitely, and it's becoming sort of a hotspot. It seems to be warming faster than some other parts of the planet. Some of it definitely has to do with warming, global warming, but some of it might have to do with atmospheric circulation, oceanic circulation that might not be directly linked to climate change. And that's one of the things when I, you know, talk about climate change and with scientists or with other people. You know, there's a lot of variability in the climate, natural variability. There's patterns that, you know, change and shift of oceanic circulation or atmospheric circulation over years or decades. But on top of that, now we have this climate change signal. We have this warming signal, and that's pushing things in the direction of being hotter or rainstorms being rainier and stuff. But there's always been, and there will continue to be, natural variability in all of those things. So you might have a year with not very many heat waves because that's just kind of the variability of things. But that doesn't mean climate change is not happening and warming is not happening.
Right. That's why we have to look at the longer term trends and things like the last 8 years being in the aggregate, the 8 hottest years on record. So the European summer last year, a particular hot spot. I know there was also the lengthy extreme heat wave in eastern and central China, another one in Pakistan, followed by that horrible flooding that a lot of people probably heard about even here, lengthy extreme heat wave in India, all that stuff from the western U.S., right? Heat and dryness impacting wildfires, the drying of the Colorado River, which is, you know, the major water source for so much of the Southwest population centers. And I think it's from your article, the Arctic is cooling 4 times as fast as the rest of the world. Is that something you reported on?
4 times as fast.
It's warming
faster. Yeah. I've written a lot about that over the years. The actual rate of warming is, the scientists have been trying to quantify it better, and the latest is that it's close to 4 times as fast. And the reason has to do with what they call Arctic amplification, where, you know, you lose, when it warms up, you lose sea ice and in the Arctic Ocean, because remember the North Pole is mostly water. So you lose this sea ice, and sea ice is white, right? And so when it's there, it reflects a lot of the sunlight. So it doesn't warm up so much because of that reflectance. If you warm the planet and start melting the sea ice, so there's less sea ice in the Arctic over time, you have more dark ocean to actually absorb that sunlight that was previously being reflected. So the ocean gets warmer, the Arctic Ocean gets warmer, the region warms up, and it's kind of like a feedback loop. The more that happens, the more ice you lose, the more ocean you expose, the more heat you generate, and it just keeps building. And that's why it's amplifying in that way, and that's why it's warming so hot, quickly.
I think we have an Arctic-related question here from Cheryl in Soho. Cheryl, you're on WNYC with Henry Fountain, who covers climate for the New York Times. As we go over 2022 climate year in review data on our climate story of the week. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, much a fan. My question, okay, so the North Pole has shifted slightly. And in 1997, I read that the Gulf Stream has slowed down somewhat. Clearly, Europe has gone through some catastrophic things increasingly. I'm wondering, with the Gulf Stream slowing down more and more, what's the impact going to be from that? I'm assuming that it's true. What's the impact of that?
Thank you, Sharon. Well, did the North Pole shift slightly, as she said?
Well, you know, the Earth does, the axis of the Earth that it rotates around does shift slightly over long periods of time. There's not been a sudden recent shift in the North Pole.
Okay.
There's also, you know, the magnetic pole shifts, but that's not related to the climate. And the Gulf Stream, so, I mean, it's a little complicated situation, but the Gulf Stream is part of what's called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, which is this giant current that takes water up to the north, and then the water sinks and comes back down at the bottom of the ocean. It's really part of the overall global oceanic circulation that does influence climate around the world. There is some evidence that it may be slowing down a little bit. I don't think most climate scientists would say they, or oceanographers would say they definitely know that yet. There's some indication that it slowed down way in the past. If it were to slow down, the reason would be more warming in Greenland in particular, putting a lot of fresh water into the ocean, changing the salinity of the ocean in the northern Atlantic, and that would change this circulation pattern. There's really not much evidence of it happening yet. A lot of scientists think it will eventually happen. If it were to happen, it would particularly affect weather in northern Europe. It might make things colder in northern Europe. But it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, there was that famous movie maybe 15 or 20 years ago, The Day After Tomorrow, and that was a very exaggerated version of what we're talking about, where all of a sudden the circulation stopped and, you know, the poor queen was in a helicopter in Scotland and the rotors froze and it fell out of the sky, things like that. I mean, that's not, you know, that's Hollywood. What we're talking about is a slow, potential slowing of that circulation.
Did we see more evidence last year of emissions coming mostly from the global north affecting disproportionately the global south?
I don't know if we're seeing more of that. I think we're more aware of, you know, the fact that the global north is really responsible for the mess we're in, and the global south probably gets a disproportionate share of the impacts. Certainly the ability to sort of deal with the impacts because of they're not as affluent as the global north. But I couldn't say for sure, but whether there's more, extreme weather, say, in the global south now than there would be in the global north, I don't think we can say that. We can say that there appears to be more extreme weather and more extreme events overall on the planet because of warming. But whether there's more now in the south, in the global south, I sort of doubt it.
Yeah. Though with the economic imbalances generally between the global north and the global south, and the fact that the global north, meaning mostly the wealthier industrialized countries, have produced the lion's share of the emissions, it's such a huge challenge for inequality to equality over time.
It is, and that's what the whole a lot of the debate in the big climate treaties now, the what was called the COP that was held in the Middle East this
right.
year and in right. Edinburgh last year.
COP 27.
You know, discussing, yeah, COP 27. Most of the discussion of that is, or a lot of the discussion these days is about loss and damage. Like, who's going to pay, who's going to help the global south pay for, the effects of climate change, rising sea levels, more storms, more heat waves, more droughts, whatever, because they're not as affluent and they didn't create the problem. The global north is affluent, and really all of the all the fossil fuels we've been burning over the last century is really what's caused the problem.
We are almost out of time, but Jonathan on the Lower East Side, I think, likes the way we've been referring to some of the data in this conversation compared to some other things that he's heard. It's just a technical point, I think. But Jonathan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think it's important to actually talk about this stuff in terms of Fahrenheit, not Celsius, because, you know, we don't use Celsius in this country, or centigrade, however you want to call it. And I do think it in general just makes people think that this is like a technocratic, I don't know, European problem, talking about 2 degrees Celsius. It seems like a little thing, but I do think it's kind of alienating. It's really just a comment.
Yeah, I think it's true.
Well,
that, you know, we know, Henry, you know, that the experts, the UN, everybody talks about 1.5 degrees Celsius being this threshold that we don't want the Earth to pass. But I framed what has happened so far over the last 100+ years as a little over 2 degrees Fahrenheit. I got it from your article, which put it in both terms. I think he's exactly right. It makes it more relatable to people in the United States.
Well, I mean, we always make a point of doing a conversion, you know, not necessarily every time in a story that a temperature is mentioned, but at least the first time it's mentioned. So we're always, you know, going to convert it to help people. But I mean, I'm of the impression or the opinion that, you know, most of the world uses Celsius, right, centigrade, just as most of the world uses the metric system for, you know, length and distance and all that. And so part of it is, you know, we want to, like, encourage people to think as the rest of the world thinks. So using Celsius or centigrade is not a bad thing. Converting it to Fahrenheit is a good thing. But doing both is really what we should be doing, I think.
I actually used to work for a radio station where for a while they wanted us to give the temperature both in Fahrenheit and in Celsius. This was in Albany, with the theory that, hey, let's help encourage the United States to join the rest of the world. But it didn't catch on and they gave it up after a while. Just
It's the same with the metric system, right? Never caught on. I think still in New Hampshire, you can see road signs where they put the distances in metric as a way to try to do that, what you're talking about. But
for the people from Canada.
Right, I guess so. I mean, as someone who, like, you know, spends my day embroiled in science, I mean, I'm a firm believer in the metric system. It's a lot easier to calculate and figure things out than what we use here in the States.
And on the climate data of last year, that's our climate story of the week. We thank New York Times climate reporter Henry Fountain. Henry, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.